Welcome to the author commentary for Star Wars. From a certain point of view, The Empire Strikes Back. Here we go behind the scenes with contributors to discuss the creative process behind their stories. A word of caution, these conversations most definitely may contain story spoilers. I'm Tom Holler, a member of the Del Rey editorial team. Right now, we're talking to Mike Chen, author of a story called Disturbance. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to talk about my first official Star Wars story.
Well, because this is your first official Star Wars story, let me say congratulations and welcome to the Star Wars family. We're very happy to have you. And I have to say that, you know, during the selection process, when we were talking about, you know, what story you're going to write, what scene, what character, I think you submitted the most options of anybody to us. You were like, here's like 1,000 ideas. And eventually, which by the way, we're all like amazing. And I think we talked about like the 4th and 5th idea. I was like, that would make a great story too. But ultimately you settled on a Palpatine concept. So what ultimately among all those choices and options that you had, what appealed to you most about this character or the scene you chose and why you were like, nope, this is the one that I want to go with?
The explanation that I told my agent and other people was, it was go big or go home. When you sent me the list of who's available, I started immediately brainstorming for Palpatine. And like I needed a story to fit, you know, the ambition of trying to write Palpatine. So I don't know if you remember, I originally asked about the cave and you said that the cave had already been taken. And it's because I was thinking about how the cave explores fear and guilt and loss. And I had this idea in my head that was almost like this inverse of what I wound up doing with Palpatine, where Yoda's biggest regret would be personified in a vision of a happy Anakin and Padme with Luke and Leia running around their feet and like, you know, the non-dictatorship alternate path that would have shown up, and that would have been like this scene of regret. And so when the cave wasn't available, and by the way, Tracy's story is fantastic. And it was perfect, and I'm so glad that she got it. And we were messaging each other, but they really work well together as a yin and yang, like her story and mine. So I inverted this when I started thinking about what I could do with Palpatine, and turned it more into a delusion of Vader's, because I think it works both ways. It's really like Yoda would wind up seeing the idea of Anakin and Padme at one way, and then Anakin slash Vader would definitely see it another way. I am, as you can probably imagine, a really big fan of the prequels and Clone Wars.
I think if it wasn't evident from anyone just from the last minute or so of us chatting, I think it becomes abundantly evident when you read through the story, given the level of detail and care that's involved in that. I think it was also that you and I had a conversation where, you know, your story gets to do one of the fun things that a lot of the stories and from a certain point of view get to do, which is you get to take a little element of the film and fill in and answer a question which is interesting and has probably sat around for like 3 or 4 decades and no one has really ever answered, and you get to, which is, you know, the one scene of the film that the Emperor appears in, that this story is in conversation with, is his conversation with Vader, where he does the expository work for anyone who's either forgotten or just for helping to continue to set up the film as it's getting going, of explaining to Vader, like, hey, there's this enemy. His name's Luke Skywalker, you know, the son of Anakin Skywalker, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And yet it's never been totally explained, and it's certainly not explained in the context of the film, of like when the Emperor becomes aware of that. And so you, in this story, get to play around with, well, how did he become aware of that? And not only how did he come aware of that, but like, why is he telling Vader about it? Like, what's the point of this? And I think that became really compelling. And you decided to help answer that question by writing a story that fundamentally and predominantly takes place inside of a Force vision. So talk to me about how you constructed what we see, because it is like breathtaking in how it builds itself. But also tell me about just how much fun it must be to write inside a Force vision, because a Force vision is essentially boundless. You can push even a story like Star Wars, which allows itself to be pushed to the extremes in so many different ways, to even go further than you would normally, because it's a Force vision, you know, it's a dream state. So tell me about this whole Force vision. Obviously it was informed by this idea you'd had originally about Yoda that you've now inversed, but just walk me through the whole thing.
Well, it was a lot of fun, mostly because the rules are kind of thrown out the window. You know, every time we've seen a Force vision on screen, you know, really weird stuff happens. And so I got to draw from pretty much everything that I loved. So, you know, there's Force powers, there's lightsaber combat. You get to see Palpatine's very manicured office on Coruscant, which I was, we emailed about, like, it does it still look the same in Revenge of the Sith? So I thought, like, if you had this projected imagination of Sith Lord Luke Skywalker, I mean, it's a bit like a fantasy football type matchup, right? You have Sith Luke fighting Palpatine, you know, would he take him out? And he totally does. So that really maximizes the Anakin delusion of, like, how powerful is Anakin? Oh, if he's this powerful, then his son must be even more powerful. So it was really cool to play the, I guess, violence side that way. But then from a character side, diving into Anakin and Padme, like, just as a delusion, I really, really love how recent media, I'd say over the past 5 years, has started to revisit the prequel era, especially with Clone Wars getting an extra season. So we get to see much more character about how Vader is really broken, and he's controlled by Padme, and not necessarily who she was as a person, but, like, what she represents to him. And it's interesting because we just showed my 6-year-old daughter episodes 1 through 6, and we used the machete order, which is 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6. And it's interesting that she sees Anakin, not Vader. So, like, she will refer to, like, Anakin's helmet, not Vader's helmet. So that's a little tangent, but it gets to the heart of, like, who is under the armor? And that's Anakin. And so what is he really feeling still? Why is he pursuing Luke, and how important is that to him, and what will he do to hide that from, you know, from the Emperor? You can only do that in a Force vision. So I got to do the really cool, like, action confrontation, but then also deep character work as well that would not have worked with, like, the logic of the real world.
And it's just it's one of the stories that you combine this idea of memory and hope along with trauma and tragedy, because when you look at the Force vision that you've laid out and the dream that Vader is having, that Anakin is having, it's interesting to see this way that, like, there's this heart of hearts moment where Anakin is dreaming of this family and this life that he's been denied. This, you know, Padme is with him, his, you know, child in the form of Luke is with him, and they are together. But it is not within this idyllic form of peace. It actually exists within the power structure of the Sith and dominion over the galaxy, and just sort of, like, the evil of subjugation. And it creates this real tragedy about whoever Anakin is, and whatever, you know, however much of Anakin still exists within Vader at this time. You've taken this kind of beautiful hope and dream for this family that was denied to him and twisted it around the power structure that he exists in. And you talked about how it's part of trying to, like, revisit the prequels and revisit Vader or Anakin's relationship to, this is actually interesting. Having grown up so steeped in the original trilogy and then the prequel trilogy after, I refer to Anakin as Vader pretty much constantly, even though it's, you know, quite the opposite from how your daughter sees it. So I'm trying to get to my question here. So how did your development of that vision marry up with how far you believe Anakin is gone at this moment? Given that, again, so much of the Sith part of Vader exists within this vision.
I think what we've seen pretty much over and over, even dating back to when we first meet Anakin as a person in The Phantom Menace, is that he's driven by fear and loneliness and regret. Not so much when he's living with his mom on Tatooine, but then, like, as soon as he leaves, like, that's everything that surrounds him. And I remember George Lucas picking the age of 9 very specifically, because he talked about how, like, that was probably, like, the age that you would, someone being separated from their parent, like, would probably do the most damage. There's the line in Attack of the Clones at the very beginning where Padme says, "You'll always be that little boy on Tatooine." And I know it's kind of like a joke line, but I think there's a lot of truth to that. Because as people, we tend to get stuck at the stage whenever we encounter trauma. And Anakin's whole trauma is, you know, first he loses his mom, and then he loses his surrogate dad in Qui-Gon. And then he's handed over to a bunch of unfeeling monks. And then he has like Mace Windu being mean to him forever. So his vision here is delusional, of course. I mean, it's what he thinks he wants, which is he wants the ability to control everything because he thinks that will give him peace, because he's been so traumatized by just constantly experiencing major loss. But then I think, like, if you theoretically played this out, and he was actually, like, if he did overthrow the Emperor and somehow Padme got gaslit into going along with it, and he had all these Star Destroyers and they're blotting out the sky of Coruscant, he still wouldn't be happy. I think in an alternate timeline, the only way Anakin would have ever really been happy is, like, right after he crash landed on Coruscant from saving Palpatine, him and Padme just, like, ran away to some backwoods planet, raised the twins together, and read a lot of self-help books. Like, that's the only way Anakin Skywalker would have ever been happy. So this vision was really just trying to show a snippet of, like, you know, this dude is not right. I mean, obviously he's not right because he's Vader, but, like, it's so much more than just being a scary, power-hungry person. It is driven by trauma and despair, really.
And you bring us to that so much during the Force Visage scenes, like in the ways that you choose to describe everything, like the intentionality with which you constructed every detail about, you know, every word you used. Like, particularly, I love the way that for, like, the Force and Palpatine, you describe the Force and Palpatine's relationship with it so juxtaposed to any way we've ever heard the Force described before. And anyone's relationship to it. With the Jedi, it's always about, like, opening yourself up and letting go and embracing and the connections around us. But the way that you have Palpatine describe the Force as itself, both this very violent, tumultuous thing, and also the way he interacts with it is very violent. He's, like, talk about clawing and grasping and, like, wrestling with it. You have all these intentional choices around your verbiage. And I know that a lot of that is actually informed by just, like, your own history with Star Wars and the Star Wars stories that you have read and experienced coming into this. So where does all this stuff come from? Tell me about that.
So I would say my favorite Star Wars book of all time, and one of my favorite books of all time, is The Revenge of the Sith novelization by Matthew Stover. It is so incredible. And if anyone listening has not read it yet, it is unlike any other Star Wars book out there. It's very literary fiction in the way that it plays with point of view, and, like, it inserts these random second person tone poems that you're like, this should not work, but it totally works. It's really amazing. And in that book, Stover often talks about the metaphor about the dark, which represents the dark side. And he talks about how it's all consuming and it always wins. And that's really, like, the first place I went to for, like, how am I going to write Palpatine? Because you and I talked about trying to keep a very distant perspective with Palpatine. Like, we're not going to get into his emotions. We're not going to, like, you know, endear him in a way because, oh, he actually likes puppies or, you know, something like that. Like, this is his whole persona is built around this long game, strategizing and controlling everything through his knowledge of the Force. So the tone of that is very much about, like, attack and control and adapt. There's also the other line that I thought of right away when I start to think, like, how is Palpatine's head, like, what is this inner monologue going to sound like? In Revenge of the Sith, when he tells Anakin that the dark side gives you focus and makes you stronger, and the way that Ian McDiarmid delivers those lines, that's really what I thought in my head as, like, that's how he views everything. And it's just in that moment he sees Anakin as an ally who is open to it, to finally give a little sliver of who he really is. So it's really, if you look at that statement, it's like the polar opposite of what Yoda says with his whole luminous beings speech. And, like, Palpatine is like, no, it's not about that at all. It's going to make you really strong and scary, and you're going to get to do what you want.
It's really stellar, and you did amazing work in making the Force vision feel like a vision and have this very intentional writing, and making the parts where we are with Palpatine, again, as you mentioned, we're not totally getting all the thoughts in his head, but we are getting those machinations. We're getting those little bits and elements of, like, we know the wheels are turning, even if he won't allow us to see them. And I want to thank you so much for coming on today and chatting with us about a story, which, frankly, I think after people read it and you go watch that scene with Palpatine and Vader, you just can't ever look at that scene again the same way, because you now can understand that that's not a conversation. That's a fight. Like, that's a battle. That's like a declaration of intent between the two of them, given now that they're basically putting their cards on the table about, you know, their relationship as Sith Lords. And it's transforming part of the Empire Strikes Back in such an incredible way.
Yeah, that goes back to the idea of, like, go big or go home. You know, I really love the other incidental ideas that I thought of, but this one will make a mark on canon. And I figured, like, if I never get to write Star Wars again, at least I did this. So thank you for having me, and thank you for bringing me on board.
It was our pleasure. You definitely went big and did it really well. Thank you again to Mike. And I want to thank everyone for listening. You can read Disturbance and all the other stories from A Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back, which is available right now from all your favorite booksellers in print, ebook, and audio download. Thank you so much. May the Force be with you.